Radio, Public Radio.
Nanaimo, how are you doing tonight? Let's do it. Let's go. Yeah. Hey, hello and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed Canadian political news and views. This is show number 135. Today is August 19th, 2009. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your televisions off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our ignore it and maybe it will go away on its own mentality is killing us. It has to end now. It is high time to wake up and to educate, to learn to work together, and to find the courage to act on our love for one another. Our every freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. The revolution has begun. I suggest you find your role. Alrighty, very nice. That is Bruce Coburn with Actions Speak Louder. Right now we got DJ Shadow followed by Ashley McIsaac as I tell you what's on tonight's show. Well, I've got a lot of audio clips tonight. I've had interviews last couple weeks, so I've been backlogging these audio clips and I'm going to get them out to you tonight. I do have a quick telephone call. It's going to be from Wayne Pronte of FalseFlagNews.com. He's putting together a protest concerning the mandatory vaccine. He's calling it We're Not Gonna Take It campaign. This is going to be downtown Vancouver Friday, August the 28th. So he's going to come on at about 8:45 or so and tell us a little bit more about that that event that he's putting on. I'm going to be reading only from one article, but it's a doozy. It's called Who is Funding the Taliban, the Afghan Taliban? You Don't Want to Know. This article is by Gene McKenzie. It originally appeared in Global Post, and this is part of a special series by Global Post called Life, Death, and the Taliban. Okay, so who's funding the Afghan Taliban? You can probably guess. It's us. Yes, way to go. Way to go. Okay, let's move into some audio clips here. I guess this will be the order that we're going to hear him tonight. I've got one from David Icke on compartmentalization. And what that means is that is how power structures work. And he gives a hell of a definition, and it's kind of like a pyramid. And the top of the pyramid is much different than the bottom. You and I are at the bottom, and we don't know what the heck's going on in the block above us, let alone the top of the pyramid. So this is a fantastic piece on how power structures work. Another clip. Obama telling the truth President Obama telling the truth about 9/11. Yes, indeed. Peter Zsa was privy to Obama telling the truth. And, well, he basically admits that that 9/11 was an inside job. Ha ha, I'm kind of kidding here. This is actually a contest put on by Alex Jones. And you might have seen pictures of President Obama painted up as the Joker from the recent Batman movie. Well, Peter's inclusion in this little contest is Obama talking and spilling the goods on 9/11. Yes, indeed. Okay, let's see. I have a longer piece. This is about 15 minutes. It's a real, real powerful piece. It's Adrian Salbucci. He's a Argentinian. And this lecture, he's calling it We the People, the Insurgency. And he's talking about how we can stop this one world government from doing what they're doing right now. Very clever fellow, and I'm positive you're going to enjoy that. Let's see, where can we go? Oh, yeah, I saw that silly movie, Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden? That's by Morgan Spurlock, who did the fast food movie Taking Down McDonald's. Not Fast Food Nation, that's a book. I'm forgetting. Supersize Me, that's what it is, Supersize Me. Anyway, so I've got, the whole awkward thing about this is Osama bin Laden isn't even wanted by the FBI for 9/11, so that's, he based his documentary movie on, some pretty faulty evidence. He didn't do his homework, that's for sure, but, he's staying within the safety net of the corporate media, and I guess he wants to be the little truth-telling darling, but, his truth is only going halfway. He does, in the special features, he gets a little bit more honest. We're going to hear a short clip on the history of Afghanistan. And likewise, we're going to hear the theme song to that movie, Where in the World is Osama bin Laden? Okay, carrying on. What else are we going to hear? I have another piece by David Icke, and this is a fantastic clip. He's encouraging you not to take the swine flu vaccine. And I would say this 5 minutes here is the strongest case against taking the vaccination that I've heard yet. So there we go. Now, this piece was filmed for B3TA. I don't know exactly what that is. However, the recorder and producer is Kurt Rutter. So well done to them. So David Icke and the swine flu. Also, I've got a new song by Trillian, Say No to the Vaccine Song. Wayne of False Flag Flu obviously sent me that one. Well done, Wayne. Okay, carrying on. Well, I've got a lot coming up tonight. Here's an audio clip from Maine. I think it's Portland, Maine, the TV station there. Well, they did a report on the National Guard and the flu pandemic. But the awkward twist on this is that apparently the National Guard is being prepared not for you guys to run kicking and screaming from the doctors with the needles, but you're going to be running to the doctors with the needles because, damn it, you guys are just so frightened that you can't wait to get this vaccine. And the National Guard are training on how to put you guys back in line and do this sensibly, I guess. So that's kind of a funny piece. Clearly a fear tactic, and, well, it's kind of humorous. Oh, let's see. Last week I was hoping to get to a couple clips from a fairly recent movie called Masked and Anonymous from 2003. It's featuring Bob Dylan. The writers, apparently, are Sergei Petrov and Rene Fontaine, but we could guess that at least one of those is Bob Dylan. Bob speaking some Bob wisdoms. We're going to hear two clips from that tonight. The first one featuring Val Kilmer talking about the disease that is mankind. And the second one is with Jeff Bridges and a little bit of John Goodman. And it's Jeff Bridges is depressed. And it's kind of an awkward thing. Dylan was, a lot of people look to him for answers, right? And Jeff Bridges, as depressed, is continuing to look for answers and, in a funny way, kind of putting answers into Dylan's mouth, even though he didn't say a damn thing about, well, whatever. You're going to hear it. It's a good piece. Okay, carrying on. I have a, this comes from Rosie O'Donnell's blog, and she had a special guest, William Rodriguez. He's the key master and also the last man out of the World Trade Center. Well, he joined Rosie to help pressure the mainstream media to actually cover William Rodriguez's stories. And what his story is that there were bombs going off below him in the basement of the World Trade Center. And the official story says, no, 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 there was no bombs, but there were many, and lots of people reported that. So lots of evidence for that. Another piece, Richard Gage, AIA, the founder and leading spokesperson for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He's being interviewed on Russian TV. And finally, a clip from The Matrix. That Wachowski, I hope I'm saying that right, the Wachowski brothers, that film 1999, it came out. This is the explanation where Lawrence Fishburne says, you know, you can take the red pill, the blue pill, and explains what The Matrix is. So, that is a lot of what we're going to get to. There's going to be a little bit more, and I hope you stick around for that. So this is the Unbought and Unbossed Show on CHLY. We're at 101.7 FM on the dial. We're also online at www.chly.ca, where you can listen live streaming. Well, it's a couple seconds, not quite live, but close enough. So let us move on to the weather update now. Okay, very nice. That takes care of that. So, I guess we'll just jump right into this David Icke piece on how power structures work. And he uses the term compartmentalization. Well, I believe he said that the CIA that came up with that term? Well, we're going to find out pretty shortly, aren't we? So, let's hear David Icke talking about compartmentalization. And then you get to hear Obama telling some truth about 9/11. Wouldn't that be nice? That is from Peter Zaza of Victoria. Thanks for sending me that clip. Okay, friends, be well, and we'll get back to you shortly.
The way that this can be done, with a very few people, at the peak, that is because if you look at every organization today, be it a university, a school, a government, a secret society, anything, a multinational company, business of any kind, they're structured as a pyramid, which works like this. In any organization, you've got a very, very few people at the peak of the pyramid. That very few people know exactly what that organization's about, what its real agenda is, what it's really trying to achieve. The further you come down from that peak in any organization, you're meeting more and more and more people who know less and less and less and less about what the organization's really about. They only know their part. The CIA call this compartmentalization, keeping from everyone else in the pyramid how what they're doing in apparent innocence links in with what other people are doing in apparent innocence to produce a very sinister pattern. The Freemasons are a classic example of this. When you say that the Freemason secret society is involved, people think that you must be saying that every Freemason wants to manipulate the world to global dictatorship. Utterly ridiculous. Of course they don't. But if you look at the Freemason structure, the vast overwhelming majority of Freemasons in the world, they never get higher than the bottom three levels of degree, the overwhelming majority. But in the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, which pervades much of world politics, particularly in America and other areas, there's another 30 degrees above that, to the 33rd degree, which the vast majority of Freemasons never get near. And there's another 13 levels, not officially accepted to exist, which some people call Illuminati degrees, which at that level, the Freemason secret society is in a different universe to the part where the vast majority of Freemasons exist, right down here. Compartmentalization. This is how it works. So every one of these institutions that control the direction of the world and our daily lives is a pyramid. The banking system is a pyramid. You go into the local bank, the person you meet across the counter won't even know what's going on in the bank manager's office behind them, let alone what's going on at board level and higher. So the banking system is a pyramid going to a peak. The intelligence agency network in the world is a pyramid going to a peak. The multinational company network is a pyramid. So is the global media and so on. And there is a global pyramid within which all these work, in which the peaks of all these individual pyramids, banking, business, media, etc., fuse into one peak. And up there, it's speculated by many people, there perhaps maybe no more than 13 families, 13 people at the peak. pervading down through these different levels the same basic policy, which is pushing the world towards more and more centralization of power. There is this like cozy little myth that is perpetuated between politicians and the media. Politicians walk the world stage as if they are the final arbiters of power in the world. So when a president speaks, the cameras run and it's flashed around the world, prime ministers and such like. The media report the world as if presidents and prime ministers are the final arbiters and decision makers in the world. Which means that the people above the level of presidents and prime ministers that really make the decisions, they're never looked at or exposed by the mainstream media because they're not accepted to exist.
Good afternoon. We meet at a time of great tension between the United States and Muslims around the world. Let me speak as clearly and as plainly as I can about some specific issues that I believe we must finally confront together. The attacks of September 11th, 2001. I'm aware that there's still some who would question or even justify the offense of 9/11. But let us be clear. The United States killed nearly 3,000 people on that day. And even now states their determination to kill on a massive scale. They have killed in many countries. They have killed people of different faiths, but more than any other, they have killed Muslims. The situation in Afghanistan demonstrates America's goals. The killing of innocent men, women, and children. These are not opinions to be debated. These are facts to be dealt with. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'd clap for that. Well done, President Barack Obama. Acknowledging 9/11 was an inside job. You heard it on the radio. It must be true, right? Yeah, okay. So there we are, Peter Zaza. Thanks for putting that together. Moving on now to a slightly longer audio clip. This is Adrian Salducci. He's calling this We the People, the Insurgency. And here's a little write-up that came with it on YouTube. Salducci begins a series of videos, video lectures, with some specific ideas, proposals, and suggestions regarding what each of us can do to fight the coming world government. Irrespective of where you are, what your work is, and what your resources, large or small, may be. He says that all journeys begin with the first step. For us, the first step must be to become aware that the one-worlders promoting world government are the enemies of all of us, the enemies of mankind. And as such, they must be fought, neutralized, and overcome. Now, I'm saying that this is one hell of a manifesto calling for a global revolution against the New World Order and one world government. So, I hope you enjoy this, and we'll get back to you before too long. Alrighty.
Hello, it's Adrian Salducci again from Argentina. Many of you have already seen my videos, especially the ones on the world government, the coming world government, and I received many emails and much correspondence from many of you, for which I thank you, and I thought it would be a good idea to start a new series of videos, which I'm going to call We the People, the Insurgency. Because in the weeks and the months to come, the United States, Europe, Argentina, we are going to see many dramatic things happening, and most of them will not be in our benefit. We live in a war system. There was a report that was issued back in 1967 under the presidency of Lyndon B. Johnson, which was called the Iron Mountain Report, which reached the conclusion that the worst thing that could happen to the United States and its national security were if world peace were to come about. Literally, it said, if lasting peace could be achieved, it would almost certainly not be in the best interest of society to achieve it. Because they said, war is an essential part of the system. war is an essential part of the economy. We have destructive capitalism. We need to destroy things physically so that capitalism can bring them back together, can build them up again. They actually said that the war system is like a flywheel. It's a counterbalance. They call war the great social stabilizer. It gives cohesion to the state because a sovereign state's ability to exert its authority over the people is directly proportional with the perceived or real threat upon the nation, whether from abroad or from inside or from above or from below. The United States needs a credible, proportional, threatening enemy. They went so far as to even say that a peril from the sky, Martians invading, and you may remember Ronald Reagan also mentioned that some years back, would also be a credible enemy as long as it is perceived to be real. Because you see, the way things are today, we don't know whether the Iron Mountain Report was genuine or not. And like the protocols of the Elders of Zion, we have no way of proving whether they are genuine or not. And that's not even important. The important thing is that they are truthful, that they are coming about as we look back the decades after decades. You see, mankind yearns for peace, but the people running the New World Order do not yearn for peace. The politicians, the bankers, they do not want peace. So if mankind wants peace, that's just not enough. Carl Schmitt, the German philosopher, used to say that every discipline has its rationale. For example, the economy distinguishes between that which is profitable and that which is not profitable. Morals distinguishes between that which is good and that which is evil. And politics distinguishes between friend and foe. And you don't necessarily have to like your political friend, nor hate your political foe. The important thing is that you identify those who have common interests and objectives with you, and those which don't. The British say brilliantly, England has no permanent friends, only permanent interests. And they should know, they are an almost 500-year empire. And if you look at the economy nowadays, it operates as a gigantic war effort, where big is good, where mergers, acquisitions, firepower imposed the will of the large corporation over all parts of the economy. You listen to the phrases they use. We conquer markets. We destroy competition. We make hostile takeovers. We have strategic planning in our business. The strategos is the ancient Greek word for the war general. And strategic planning uses tactics, which is the art of organizing an army, the techniques for using weaponry, military units, to engage and defeat an enemy in battle. Not a physical battle, but a battle for markets, a battle for segments and so forth. You see, today, we the people are at war. A war is being waged against us on many fronts, and we do not seem to realize it. A war is being waged against we the people on the political, the economic, the financial, the cultural, the technological, the social, the media fronts. But above all, a psychological war is being waged against us. A psy war, psychological war, as Saddam Hussein would say if he was still around, poor guy. Psy war is the mother of all wars. And psy war is a war for your mind. It goes through education and programming, which for thousands of years, prime education was a question of the family. Your main educational vehicle was your own family. Then in the 19th, 20th century, that was replaced by the state. The prime educator was the state. And today, the prime educator is not even the state. It is the media. It's television. It's radio. It's the press. It's advertising. It's internet generating lifestyles. Arbitrary lifestyles. So listen. The first rule of psy war, the ancient philosopher Sun Tzu used to say this, the first rule of psy war is to get the enemy, we the people, because from their point of view we are the enemy, to get the enemy to believe that there is no war. Because if your enemy feels that there is no war, he won't even fire a shot to defend yourself, to defend themselves. And what better than to win a war without even firing a shot? If you think that you are not at war, you do not defend yourselves. Keep that in mind. The second rule of psy war is to make us believe that they, the people who own the New World Order, are much stronger than they really are, and that we, the people, are much weaker than we really are. Okay, they're strong. Okay, we're weak. But the gap is not that big. The third rule of psy war is to hide the truth, to cover up, to make the truth invisible, to generate smoke screens, to distort, to lie, to confuse, to falsify, to divert and pervert the truth, to falsify history. George Orwell, in his brilliant novel 1984, once said, "He who controls the past controls the present. He who controls the present controls the future." That's why it's so important for them to falsify our view of our own history, whether it be our nation's history in each country that we're in, or global history. And the fourth rule of cyborg is that there are always two sides to every war and to every battle. And what I'm talking about today is that the two sides are them, who are a small, compact, powerful, well-organized minority, and I stress minority, wielding tremendous clout, tremendous leverage, and tremendous power on the one side. And on the other side, it's we the people, the vast majority. We are too busy to think. We are undereducated. We are too caught up in our day-to-day lives, those little slices of reality, to understand, to organize, to even become aware. We are potentially powerful, but we are in total disarray. They are potentially weak because they are small in numbers, but today they are very well organized. So let's first see what we cannot do yet. We cannot meet them on their terms. They are too vast and too powerful. We who start to awaken are still but a small portion of we the people. We easily succumb to their tactics. We are systematically silenced by their media, which controls the minds of people. If we break, as some of us do, the cone of silence, we are met with scorn, we are met with name-calling. They automatically brand us as conspiracy theorists, anti-Semites, nationalists, traditionalists, paranoids, and if necessary, they will even exert violence against us. It will be very difficult for us to erect a power structure like they have. They have the money, they have the media, they have the organizations. That's not going to be the way, besides there's no time. They own... And when I say they, I mean the people from the New World Order. They own and control almost the entire physical world. But they have grown fat, corrupt, dark, and weary. Time is not on their side, and they know it, which explains why they are in such a hysterical rush. We the people, in turn, control very little of the physical world. But our growing spiritual power puts time on our side. Remember that, please. Their power base is money, usury, speculation, parasitic behavior. They are vultures. They are blood-sucking vampires. They are like Dracula. Our power base is different. We have the warrior's passion. We have spirit. We have strength and honor. We are eagles. We are heroes. We don't inspire ourselves in Dracula. We think of Jason. We think of Parsifal. We think of the true heroes of mankind. What can we do, and what can we do now? First of all, think with our own minds, not with theirs. We have to awaken and understand what is happening. And when we do, we have to awaken others. And when they do, we have to plan and organize collectively. Aside from planning and organizing each of our own individual lives, because we are all in different circumstances, we have to understand their tactics. Globalization, for example, which they imposed upon the world for 20 years, if we compare globalization to a balloon, which is global, I would say that the most overblown balloon can be easily made to burst if you use the microscopic tip of a pin. So let us all become those microscopic pins that will make their globalization balloon burst. And we have to make it burst before they have time to impose world government on us. We have to do our own strategic planning in each country, in each province, in each city, in each neighborhood, in each block, in each group, family, friends, colleagues. We have to identify threats and opportunities which are external. What are the threats that they are posing to us? And what are the opportunities? For example, a threat, they want to impose world government on us. An opportunity, the internet, we can communicate. And then the strengths and weaknesses that we have, which are internal. What are we strong at? Where are we weak? We are weak in that we have very little physical resources. We are strong in that we have spirit. We have the warrior spirit. It's basic risk management. And as I say, internet is a hell of an opportunity that allows us to do what we are doing now globally. We can interact. We can interface. Look at it. I'm in Buenos Aires, Argentina right now. And this video can be seen just as well by my neighbor across the street or by you friends in New York, in Texas, in South Africa, in Egypt, in California, in the United Kingdom, in Germany, in Malaysia, in Iran, in Canada, in France, in Russia, in Brazil. That's a lot of power. So we have to understand that this is war. Put it in your mind, in golden letters. We are at war. And it is a war so powerful and so subtle that only now are some of us starting to realize that we have been at permanent war for almost a century. Their war machine has units, brigades, squadrons, battalions, armies. I'll give you some of their names. The Federal Reserve Bank, the Bank of England, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the World Jewish Congress, the World Zionist Organization, Freemasonry, the CIA, MI6, Mossad, the Anti-Defamation League, APAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, the Military-Industrial Complex, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the Bank of International Settlements, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, Exxon, British Petroleum, HSBC, Royal Dutch Shell, the World Economic Forum, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox News, BBC, the World Health Organization, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the Economist, the Financial Times, the Murdoch and Conrad Black Media Empires, Halliburton, Roche, Pfizer. I could go on for a long time. They are very powerful armies that they wield against us. And they have their symbols. The Pentagon, the White House, 10 Downing Street, bird flu, swine flu, the war on terror, 9-1-1, 9-11, 7th July in London, Osama bin Laden, the boogeyman, Hollywood, Congress. It's a veritable swarm that they throw against us. And like a hydra, even if you cut one head, another one will grow in its place. They are powerful. So awakening means realizing that war is being waged against us. It means understanding that we are under mortal attack. It means understanding that we are in a stance where for each of us and for each of our countries, it's a question of to be or not to be. And it's up to you to decide to be, and it's up to them to try to make sure that we will not be. So awakening others, planning, and acting means counterattacking. We the people going to war. The key is a paradigm change. We have to migrate from today's war against we the people that we are only now starting to realize even exists to tomorrow's we the people at war. I repeat, we have to go from this war against we the people to we the people at war. We must use the tactics of the weak. We must become intellectual guerrillas. Don't fear being involved in intellectual skirmishes, in traps, setting traps to them, in intellectual Aikido. Big is not always the best. Let me give you an example. If two people who are mortal enemies are inside this room where I'm in right now, and one has a 125mm anti-aircraft machine gun, and the other one has a 9mm pistol, who's more powerful? The guy with the 125mm anti-aircraft gun is slow. He's going to have trouble moving. And if he shoots, he might even demolish the whole building and throw and kill himself in the process. Whilst the guy with the small 9mm pistol, he can just aim and shoot. So here, big firepower is not better. Small firepower and flexibility is better. Keep that in mind. I used to give us an example when I gave conferences during the Bush years in Argentina that I used to say to somebody in the audience, Juan Perez, hey Juan, think what would happen if you, little Juan Perez, had to go and meet George W. Bush and negotiate on behalf of Argentina. The guy would say, oh my God. I go, yeah, okay, you're right. But let's just say we support you with good intelligence. And when you're meeting with George Bush, we know from beforehand that George W. is very scared of WASPs. So what do? Whilst you're discussing the future of Argentina with George W. Bush, I go inside the room with a little flask, a little jar, with 8 or 9 very aggressive wasps. I open the jar and I let them loose. And when George W. sees that, he's going to get nervous. He's going to not concentrate on what he's doing. He's going to start sweating. He's going to want to end the meeting as soon as possible. And you might get more out of him than you would have had he been completely focused on screwing Argentina, to say it very mildly. So very often, to have intelligence and information on something that does not even have to do with what you're dealing with can be a hell of an advantage. Intelligence. Thinking. If we decide to fight back, we need to interact and interface globally, and then we shall prevail, because we are more, we are better, and we are stronger. What can we do? The tea parties that you're doing in the United States, rebellions, town halls, disobedience, passive disobedience like Gandhi used to say, not pay taxes, get out of the system. That is the key. That's the big change. That we decide to fight back, that we decide to take our countries back, that we the people will simply not take this anymore. From Argentina, I'm Adrian Salvucci, and I'm raising a global army, quote unquote, to kill the New World Order and world government vultures. Will you help me? Welsh poet Dylan Thomas once recommended, "Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light." So let it be. Goodbye. Good luck.
Okay, very nice. Hey, get Matthew back in the box. Okay, I give you, now you know what's coming up, don't you, son of a gun. But what we just heard was Adrian Salvucci with ways to stop this world government, and who would have known that the answer is wasps. Yes, I was camping this weekend, and I got stung on the hand, first time ever, and my hand looks like a boxing glove right now. Yes, so George, I can see why you're a little bit nervous of them. Indeed. Okay, so as promised, I'm going to have Wayne Pronte of falseflagflu.com on with us in a moment. We're going to hear Matthew Good. This is my favorite Matthew Good song. It's Lullaby for the New World Order. Fantastic lyrics. It is a great piece. So let's get that, and then we'll be talking with Wayne Pronte. And, of course, this is the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY.
I have a favor to ask, maybe this is a bad time. No, whenever you ask, there's never a good time. Do you take your heart out of this? How can you take your heart out of this? Somebody gave you a choice.
very nice. That is Matthew Good with a lullaby for the New World Order. And I hope that means we've put him to sleep. They got lots of wasps, stings on them, and they're going into shock. Wouldn't that be nice? So as promised, I have Wayne Ponte on the phone. Wayne was on a couple of shows back for a full interview talking about the false flag flu, as he's calling it. Well, he's organizing a street protest, an action. He's calling the campaign, "We're Not Gonna Take It." And he's talking about the vaccine. So welcome back to the show, Wayne.
Well, thanks so much, Raymond. Good evening, the Nemo, and truth activists from coast to coast to coast.
Right on. Yep, thanks for doing your part. So now, right now you're wearing the falseflagflu.com armband, but you've also worn the Fraser Valley 9/11 Truth and the warcriminalsout.com. So you're
absolutely
kind of a busy guy right now.
Gotta wear them all alternatively. This one, as I said last time, is on the front burner for me right now. But just to touch on the war criminals issue, just briefly, Splitting the Sky is actually going to be in Victoria coming up, I believe, the weekend of the September 11th, I think the 12th or 13th.
Oh, no kidding.
In Victoria.
Really?
To give a talk. I think it's the Anarchist bookstore or something like that is sponsoring him there. Let me just bring that up here.
Yeah, very nice. That's the first I've heard of it. I'll need to get someone from Victoria to fill me in on that.
Fourth annual Victoria Anarchist Book Fair and Festival, September 12th to 13th, 2009. And that is at the Downtown Community Activity Center, 755 Pandora. So, and I know, just having talked to him, in the last week or so, he does have some new exciting information coming out. So you might want to look at getting him on again soon.
Okay, very nice. Thanks. And, also I'm sure that he's going to, bring a box of his, autobiography. Which is a hell of a read. I'm working on it now. It is very thick, dense, lots of information. It's not a quick read. It's not a novel, that's for sure.
Absolutely not.
But,
no.
For truthers that want some information of this Splitting the Sky, that is a hell of a book.
And we have brand new T-shirts out for Splitting the Sky as well.
Okay, good. What are they saying?
They're saying, "I support the man who tried to arrest George W. Bush in Calgary on March 17th.
Excellent.
And has the infamous picture of his where the police were taking him down in Calgary, the face of the fascism picture on it.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, so I'm sure he'll have those in Victoria as well, and I know he'd look forward to seeing from the Nanaimo down there to meet up with him as well.
Okay, I'll see if I can't organize it. Did you say the day of the week that was?
No, I'm not sure exactly which day it's going to be. We'll have to do a double check with him on that one, but I know that festival, I think, on the 12th and 13th.
Okay.
Of September.
Yeah. I still haven't met the guy face to face yet. I've had him on the show a number of times, and so I've got to get this done.
For sure. Yeah. So, anyways, on the other issues of the flu and vaccine issues, I was up with you briefly last week, and I told you about the website I had just put up at that time. It was falseflagflu.com. The word's been getting out slowly. This week I was able to get on, I was on the show with Dr. Bill Deagle Monday. Yesterday I was on Project Camelot, as well as the What Really Happened Radio with Mike Rivero. And it's just taken off. We had like about 1,300 hits on the website yesterday, a couple thousand today.
Wow, very nice.
And it seems to be really spreading around now from mouth to mouth, virally. And that's what we need.
Yeah, no pun there, right? Okay, so now you're organizing an action for Friday, August the 28th, a street action, and you're calling
it's
the event
actually,
a...
We're calling... It's actually... we're trying to organize a national day of, it's an informational demonstration as well as a political protest in Canada.
Okay.
And we're trying to get all major cities on board and as many small towns as we can get, medium small towns as well. We're definitely doing this on Friday, the 28th in Vancouver, and that's going to be at the Art Gallery on Robson Street. We're asking people to be there no later than 4 p.m., probably a bit earlier would be good. And it will go till 6:30 p.m.
Okay.
Now we're going to have a number of speakers on hand, some of whom you know, including Kevin Annett.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
And a number of local people who are quite knowledgeable on the subject of vaccines. And I've been in contact with people from Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, and other cities, and it looks like they are definitely behind us, and they're going to try and do something. We can't confirm anything at this point, but the one in Vancouver is definitely going ahead. So then what we're trying to do, follow that up with, is on that same weekend, on the 29th and 30th, that would be Saturday, Sunday, we want people to get out on the streets in their own towns, in their own neighborhoods, and start spreading around our flyers or get our DVDs and start spreading those around and start informing your friends, family, neighbors, whoever you can in your apartment building.
Now, can we get some informational flyers from falseflagnews.com?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
There's a section on there. It says activist tools. Well, we've also got one page that's just about the We're Not Going to Take It campaign. It's right at the top. You'll see a link for it there, so you can look at that. And then on our main page, if you scroll down, you'll see a section just for activist tools. And I've come up with about 16 different versions of signs that are pre-formatted. All you have to do is they're PDF files. They're about 1 megabyte big. You download them, and it will print off in 12 different pages, and you just paste those onto signboard.
Okay, nice.
Okay. So you've got signs that are ready-made to go. All you got to do is take about an hour out of your time to make up a sign.
Very nice. That's a good idea.
Probably not even an hour. So we're trying to make it as user-friendly as possible. We're trying to make basically an activist drive-through, get what you need and go. There are going to be some bumper stickers and T-shirts and things like that available. I haven't got them yet. I have one of the T-shirts already, but I haven't got it on the site yet for anybody to see. We've got, as I say, the DVDs, I've told you about already. I've got actually 3 DVDs available. All you have to do is contact me via email through the website there. There's a form on there for contacting us, and I will tell you the information about that. And they're very cheap, but they're packed with information. Each of them has about 5 hours worth of information to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I sent you, some recently.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll pass those on to Chris, and Chris is really good at, making copies. Both my burners are down right now, so I'm kind of stuck. So I'm hoping Chris will get some copies made.
Right on. Yeah, this is a good guy. Yeah, so that's basically the skinny of it right now, where things stand. I can't confirm the other speakers for you at this point in time, but there are going to be multiple speakers there. We're expecting hundreds of people to show up for this. We're working with a number of different groups, and that's what really needs to happen right now. We need people to focus on this one, put other stuff aside for the moment, and get busy and start spreading the word in our own different activist communities.
Very nice.
And we know we can get back to the other stuff later, but this is coming down the pipe. We want to get it done, or get this going before the kids go back to school. We think that's essential.
Okay.
Because that's when the big push is going to start for vaccination.
Yeah.
Okay, and of course the weekend after that is Labor Day, and a lot of people will be away, and so on. So we've decided on the last weekend of this month.
Okay, good.
Okay. Now we don't at present time. I've been trying to contact somebody in Victoria, trying to find anybody in Victoria who can just take the lead with this thing and try and get something going there. It would be so nice to see a protest of any size, even if it's only a couple of people
in the capital city. Yeah.
Buildings or the legislature building in Victoria. All we need is one person to step forward and say, okay, we're going to do it, find a location, and let us know where it's going to be. We can start spreading the word, and we'll get the people to you. We just need somebody to take the lead. And it would be really nice to see the same sort of thing happen in Nanaimo and in other, smaller towns.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, I'm definitely going to check out the website, falseflagflu.com, look at some of these information sheets that you've compiled, and definitely start getting the word out.
Wonderful. And once people have decided on a place where they can do it, it's going to be pretty easy to get people to attend. And what we'll do is we'll just make up a small flyer that you can go out with. And what I'm suggesting to people is that you hang around your local health food store.
Okay, there you
There's
go.
One in every town. Usually a couple in every town.
Good point.
And that's where you're going to find people that are, pretty aware and know what's going on. And I think you'll find some allies very quickly that'll help you out on this.
Okay, very nice. Yeah, good ideas.
So you could pass on your flyer to them about the protest, as well as some information about the H1N1 virus and the vaccine agenda.
Yeah. Well done, Wayne.
All right, that's about it.
Okay. So, downtown Vancouver, Friday, August the 28th, if you can be there by 4 at the Art Gallery, various speakers.
Right, and that's the other thing. 6:30, we're going to go till 6:30, and then we're going to take march down to the CBC building, and we're going to let them know right in the middle of news hour that we're not going to take it.
Excellent. Very good.
Okay.
Wayne, hey, thanks. I'm going to be playing a piece by David Icke talking about he's pleading with people not to take the swine flu vaccine. Have you seen that clip? It's a six-minute clip, and I'm finding it the most effective out of all the clips that I've been seeing the last months.
Yes.
Icke nails it.
Yeah, and you'll find that on that's actually on the newest of the three DVDs that I've put
together. Oh, okay, there you go. Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, yeah, that's going to be coming up in a little while.
I appreciate it. Yeah, and maybe it'd be good to hear from Chris, too. Let me know how he's making out with his DVDs over there.
Sounds good. Yeah, he said he might stop in tonight to say hi to the listeners. Nothing yet, so I'm not too sure.
Wonderful.
Okay, Wayne, I want to thank you.
Thank you, Raymond.
Take care, partner. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, very nice. That's a quick visit with Wayne Pronte. FalseFlagFlu.com. That's where you want to visit. So, very nice. Let's carry on now. I told you about all those audio clips that I have coming up. I just spilled the beans on the David Icke one. But we're not going to get to that for a couple minutes. The next one is an instrumental hip-hop tune featuring Kevin Barrett. And this is by DJ Hipster of New York. DJ Hipster of New York. And this video slash song is to support Kevin Barrett's latest truth book called Questioning the War on Terror, A Primer for Obama Voters. Very nice. I had Kevin on the show not too long ago. He was telling me about that book. It is now out and available. However, sadly and interestingly, DJ Hipster of New York begins the video with the little with a saying on the screen that says, "Any copying is illegal." And I'm not too sure what he's talking about there. The idea of copying being illegal is not very truth movement friendly. Certainly the internet that I want to be a part of is the free sharing of information. You put it up there and it's fair game. And, you know, that's where I get all my audio clips from. So I guess I'm kind of bucking his little system here. And, well, I copied it and you're going to hear it. So here we are. This is an instrumental hip-hop piece featuring Kevin Barrett by DJ Hipster of New York. And so there's the warning. Don't be copying this, guys. And then, after we hear that, we're going to move on to the two clips that come from the fairly recent film, Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden? By Morgan Spurlock. The first piece comes from the special features called The History of Afghanistan. And the second one is the song by John Spurney. That, you know, the theme song to the movie, I guess. And so that's where we're going to go. So I'll get back to you guys in about, what does that add up to? Oh, maybe about 8 minutes or so. So you friends, hang in there. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tell you about my website because I'm going to be posting that information that Wayne Pronte shared with us on my website, as well as I'll tell you what else was on the show, links to the different websites to, you know, get this stuff firsthand and, you know, to further your research. So what you can do, if you want to visit my website, and I also archive shows, so if you missed a previous show, that's how you can get the link to it. So it is unbossed.livejournal.com. That's unbossed.livejournal.com. And what the heck, I'll even throw in my email address if you want to contact me. It is at RaymondTruthRadio. RaymondTruthRadio@hotmail.com. So there you go. There's all my 411. So let's get on to these audio clips. And this is DJ Hipster of New York, followed by two clips from Morgan Spurlock's fairly recent movie, Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden?
I don't think this is the proper forum, though, for people that hold extremist views like yourself.
توسط کشورهای خارجی اونم خانه خراب شده. چرا نمیای وارا جور کنن؟ کار مثبت انجام نداده دیگه.
It wouldn't be the first time that the Afghans were disappointed by the U.S. That happened back in the 80s, when the CIA was funneling weapons and aid to a group of Afghan freedom fighters, one of whom was Osama bin Laden, to fight off the Soviets. Once the Soviets were defeated, the Afghans counted on the U.S. to help rebuild their country. But without the Soviet Union to fight, the U.S. soon lost interest and left Afghanistan to fend for itself. The country quickly descended into chaos and civil war, and when the Taliban seized control, it offered Osama bin Laden the perfect base to mount his plans for world domination. But after the attacks on 9/11, the U.S. returned to Afghanistan with three objectives: find Osama bin Laden, overthrow the Taliban, and rebuild Afghanistan. You see, America's great at being the big action hero, swooping in, taking down the bad guy, blowing things up, and saving the day. And we're much better at flying off into the sunset than aiding the survivors or rebuilding a city left in ruins. Cut to today, where more than 6 years and $80 billion later, Osama's nowhere to be found. The Taliban are back on the rise, and the country looks like it belongs in another century.
Singing voice, he worked on parts of foul, but he slipped my grip, abandoned ship, took the dip in the Grand Canal.
Very nice. Indeed, you are listening to CHLY in the Namo. Welcome back to the Unbought and Unbossed Show. What did we hear before those announcements? That was Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden by John Spurney, S-P-U-R-N-E-Y, then a short history of Afghanistan, and then an instrumental hip-hop that, well, you're not allowed to no copying allowed, apparently, and, well, we'll see what happens with DJ Hipster of New York. We're going to move on now to the only piece I'm going to be reading from tonight. This is a fairly recent article. It comes from the Global Post. It is called, Who is Funding the Afghan Taliban? You Don't Want to Know. This article is by Gene McKenzie, and it is part of a special series by Global Post called Life, Death, and the Taliban. Okay, so Dateline Kabul. It is the open secret no one wants to talk about. The unwelcome truth that most prefer to hide. That could be a lot of things, couldn't it? Well, in Afghanistan, one of the richest sources of Taliban funding is the foreign assistance coming into the country. Virtually every major project includes a healthy cut for the insurgents. Call it protection money, call it extortion, or, as the Taliban themselves prefer to term it, the spoils of war. The fact remains that international donors, primarily the United States, are to a large extent financing their own enemy. Well, of course they are. They create their own enemy, and they gotta keep them going, right? Because this war is making a lot of people rich. Not you and me, though. Carrying on, I am skipping a bit here. Up until quite recently, most experts thought that drug money accounted for the bulk of Taliban funding, but even here, opinion was divided on actual amounts. Some reports gauge the total annual income at about $100 million, while others place the figure as high as $300 million, which is still a small fraction of the $4 billion poppy industry. So where's that other $3.7 billion going, I wonder, huh? New administration officials have launched a search for Taliban sponsors. Richard Holbrook, U.S. Special Envoy to Afghanistan and Pakistan, told a press conference in Islamabad last month that drugs accounted for a far less share of Taliban coffers than was previously thought. I've got to close the door. Hang on a minute, friends. Oh, we call that dead air. That seemed like about 4 hours for me. That was probably about 4 seconds for you, though. There we go. Okay, carrying on here. This is Holbrook speaking. In the past, there was a kind of feeling that the money all came from drugs in Afghanistan. According to media reports, that simply is not true. So where's it coming from? Let's find out. Anecdotal evidence is mounting
that the Taliban are taking a hefty portion of assistance money coming into Afghanistan from the outside. This goes beyond mere protection money or extortion of taxes at the local level. Very high-level negotiations have taken place between Taliban and major contractors, according to sources close to the process. A shadowy office in Kabul houses the Taliban contracts officer, who examines proposals and negotiates with organizational hierarchies for a percentage. He will not speak to or even meet with a journalist, but sources who have spoken with him, and who have seen documents say that the process is quite professional. The manager of an Afghan firm with lucrative construction contracts with the U.S. government builds in a, check this out, a minimum of 20% for the Taliban in his cost estimates. The manager, who will not speak openly, has told friends privately that he makes in the neighborhood of $1 million per month, and out of this, $200,000 is siphoned off for the insurgents. If negotiations fall through, the project will come to harm. Road workers may be killed or attacked, bridges may be blown up, engineers may be assassinated. The degree of cooperation and coordination between the Taliban and aid workers is surprising and would most likely make funders extremely uncomfortable. One Afghan contractor, speaking privately, told friends of one project that he was overseeing in the volatile south. The province cannot be mentioned, nor the particular project. It's interesting here. No one's names are being given here, so, you know, make of it what you will. But this unmentioned person says, I was building a bridge, he said, one evening over drinks. The local Taliban commander called and said, don't build a bridge here, we'll have to blow it up. I asked him to let me finish the bridge, collect my money, then he could blow up the bridge whenever he wanted. He agreed, and I completed my project. Very nice. That's how you make money. Oh, Kate, a little bit left here. Many Afghans see little wrong in the militants getting their fair share of foreign assistance. This is international money, said one young Kabul resident. We are not taking it from the people. They are taking it from their enemy. That's an interesting twist. So, to conclude here, all things are relative, right? So if the Taliban are able to raise and spend, let's say, $1 billion per year, that is the outside limit of what anyone has been able to predict, so that's the maximum, let's say it's $1 billion a year. Well, you know what? That accounts for what the U.S. is now spending in, guess how many days? In 10 days, they spend $1 billion to defeat the Taliban. Isn't that something? I don't really think that's the game. I think that they need the Taliban there to keep this war going, and that's the shitty, sad truth, so says I. Okay, so that was an abbreviated version of an article by Gene McKenzie called Who is Funding the Taliban in Afghanistan? You Don't Want to Know. And that came from Global Post. Isn't that something? I'm not a bit surprised if that's the case. That would just seem to make a lot of sense. Okay, well, let's carry on here and move on to more audio clips. These next two are going to be about that vaccine shot that, well, the world seems to be being promised that we need, and we're going to be getting it real soon. Pretty unfortunate. I have not talked to anyone who suggests that that is a good idea. Quite the contrary. And one of those people is David Icke. And we already heard from David earlier today on explaining how power structures work, and the term he's using is compartmentalization, but now he's going to be talking about the encouraging you not to take the swine flu vaccine. And if you need a little more encouragement, I've got a song by Trillion called Say No to the Vaccine. So that's what we're going to hear next, and there we are. This is Unbought and Unbossed. I'm your host, Raymond, and we'll be back before too long. Be well, friends.
This is really important, and I hope that this can get out on the web as far as possible, as quickly as possible. I've been watching this for a while. If you
Do you want me one thing in the next few months that is to protect you and your family, then do this. Don't have the vaccine. Don't have the vaccine. Tell as many people as you can, don't have the vaccine. Get on the internet. Check it out. Go to my website. You'll see the charges that have been filed with the FBI against this group of people and organizations. This is the idea, because they want to dramatically reduce the number of people in the world, and they also want to access the body and therefore destabilize it mentally, emotionally, and physically. This is why we've had this explosion of vaccines for kids to the point now where they're having 25 or more before the age of 2, yes, in America and Britain and elsewhere, and this is pouring total shite into a still emerging immune system. You've got a growing, developing immune system, and you're saying, the first 2 years of life, have some of that, darling. We have an incredible defense system called the human immune system. And when that is strong and in optimal efficiency, it keeps us well. It gets rid of foreign attacks on the body. If you undermine the human immune system, or you stop it developing properly so it's undermined for life by throwing all this stuff at under twos, then you open people up to getting illnesses and being killed by things that the immune system in its true optimal state would deal with easily. There is a war on the human immune system, because when that goes down, we go down. Because we're going to live for long if that's not working properly. And they're targeting the kids from a very, very early age. And that's what this is all about, on one level. But on another level, this is about a cut of the population. I'm not saying for a second that vast numbers of people will keel over overnight. That would be too bloody obvious. But the effects of this vaccine, as people move forward, is going to manifest itself in lots of different ways. It's more likely that there will be effects of many and various kinds, because the body is an electrochemical organism, and it has an optimum electrochemical balance, and we call that health. When you imbalance that through introducing chemicals and electromagnetic sources, then you move it from optimum, and it no longer works correctly, emotionally, mentally, or physically. And if you look at the cumulative chemical onslaught, particularly on children, but people in general, in food, drink, soft drinks, and mobile phones and all that stuff on the electromagnetic side, humans are being bombarded. There's a war on our children's minds, there's a war on our children's immune systems, and there's a war on our children's emotional balance. And it's connected into all these different areas of food, of drink, and of vaccines, of pharmaceutical medicines. They invent diseases so that problem, or in this case, no problem, reaction, solution. Take this.
It's like the 1976 US swine flu. There was loads of scary adverts on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Penny went to the shop and she gave it to, and there was all that kind of stuff. And as it went on, the music got darker, yeah. The voice echoing, it was really, and then they showed people kind of playing golf and then shivering in bed.
This is it. The whole foundation of it is a mind game.
Yeah.
It's about the manipulation of our perception of everything, because our perception leads to our behavior and our actions. If you're going to control someone's actions, then you need to control their perception, because that controls their actions, and the perception they want people in more than anything is danger, danger, danger. Because once you get someone in fear of something, they will look outside of themselves for something or someone to protect them from what they've been manipulated to fear. So get them to fear swine flu, they will then say, save me from swine flu, okay.
Give us
your arm.
Good
night. Right. Give us your children's arm. Oh no, oh darling, you must be vaccinated, your swine flu's coming. Pathetic. All people have got to do, go on the internet and put in 1976 swine flu conspiracy or words to that effect, or go into YouTube and see the adverts they put out in 76 to frighten people into being vaccinated for an epidemic that did not happen, and the consequences of it. People died, people had their minds scrambled. It was, and they want to do that now on a massive case scale. What they do, you see, is they have their version of trials. They've got a big version of something coming, but further down the line, or back down the line, they try it out. And what they're looking for is, will the public do it? Will the public stand for it? Will the public react the way we want?
Okay, so let's give thanks to the financial supporters of CHLY who brought you that entertainment update. And they are Edmonton 911 Truth, Fraser Valley 911 Truth, and WarCriminalsOut.com. Very nice. If you want to add your name, well, not your name, your group, your truth group, to that list of people I can thank every week for supporting CHLY, I would absolutely love to do that. There is a fundraiser coming up before too long, but you don't have to wait till then. You can throw down $150, and I will proudly say your name every week. So there we are. It's important for you guys to support this station, and I'm sincere about that. So why don't we get back to Say No to the Vaccine song by Trillium, which I promised and interrupted with that events update. So let's move on to that, and then... Yes, a little bit of fear-mongering propaganda coming from your television. A Maine station is reporting on the National Guard. They're being trained to keep you guys in order when the flu vaccine is ready, because they're saying that you're just going to go apey and you're going to go crazy and you're going to riot because you want that vaccine so bad that the National Guard needs special training on how to deal with you flu junkies. So we're going to hear Say No to the Vaccine by Trillium, and then that TV faux news broadcast about the National Guard preparing for the pandemic riots. That's I'm not making this up. I'm not making that up. That's amazing. So let's get on to that good stuff, and we'll talk to you before too long. All right? Be well.
Put the needle on the record, put the needle on the record, put the needle on the record when the song beats go like this.
The only way that a human being can get a bird flu or a swine flu is if it is injected in them.
So how did we get swine flu then?
It's been made in a factory and injected.
Put the needle on the record, put the needle on the record.
I put the needle to the record, cause the needle is effective, and the needle breaks the record when the needle is the method. The prevention of the fever, bringing death to the receiver. There's no effort in believing that the method sees the fever, see the leader. Diseases are invented in the lab, one believes it. On reading recent mentions of the jab, centered in a grand scab of corruption and lies, injecting views of doom from newsroom into the public eye. But now the floor has risen on the cause of autism. Doctors show research and scores of flawed wisdom. It's mercury and vaccines, often there's more given, peace ignored and forbidden, cause profit is war driven. A score billion on vaccines alone, and the government don't care, they're always texting the clones, and the CDC is right behind this rolling cart, part and bolt from the start and this evolving art. Big pharma, big deception, Obama, big karma, it's a white roach player and vex the healthcare, all the sorted history with stacks of health scares. You got HIV and birth flu mixed up in the shop, something connecting the dots between the money that flops. Conspiracy? Yeah, I sense a couple of.
If you never want to get the swine flu, don't go get the swine flu vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
And if the doctor says, make him take it himself. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health.
Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
And if the pharmacist says, make him take it himself. Just say no.
say no to the vaccine.
I don't need your prescription, I ain't got no affliction. Corporate pharmaceuticals dealing with politicians. Put them on prescription, that should be our own decision. Whether we want spending on vaccines or health and education. Soon they enlist the general populace. They added to the list, pharmaceutical benefits. Yo, Alexa Finland, Glasgow Smith Klein. Pop a match and fine, feeling for your disease. Not have coffee, better swine. Your population linked with holding vaccines. Rather let a product like sensation human beings. Now that they're coming with the news, so they want to hear us when we're running on the machine. Yeah, another flu kill, that ain't no biggest threat. What about an aging population with no safety net? So we continue to believe everything we read. There just ain't no taste in their news feed.
Weapons of trial and error, we're smiling in terror at the doctor and nurse. Take a hold of yourself and control of your health and say no.
No, why don't you go first?
One little word that can save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine. The doctor says make him take it himself.
Say no
to the vaccine. One little word that can save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
If Obama says make him take it himself, just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
Don't get any injection. You never know what's in them. They're all poison. And there's no record that they ever prevent anything.
The vaccine manufacturers need approximately 8 to 9 months to produce the amount of vaccine that's going to be required for immunizing the at-risk populations. And so we have to make our recommendations almost a year in advance.
Yeah, you need to stand up for your rights.
Was I? Conspiracies, secret ops, and spy stations, and the catch word of the year, depopulation. But humans generally are hard to kill, even with the jar of pills. That's why the politicians have to pass the bills with compulsory Gardasil. From Malta to Dargaville and Fathersville, another bill protects this evil Gardasil. Make a murder from liability for illness or death that may occur. Cause infertility and cancer are hidden inside the brick. And immune disorders help you get ridden, retired, and sick. Research is your friend, knowledge keeping is king. Every vaccine has a poison dollar deep in a sting. It's no master flu, they're just after me and you. The last dance is due, now they mask us. These roots are through the cheeks, sweet dreams, swine flu. A scan too designed to make a trillion bucks on out-of-date Tamiflu. Manufactured viruses, biological warfare, psychological torture, gel or jab,
awesome warfare.
Our bodies are designed to fight those bugs intruding, but only when our diet is right, so don't shove junk food in.
In 1976, it was thought we were on the brink of another major flu outbreak. Medical science appeared to be prepared. The experts planned to use their best weapon yet, prevention with the flu vaccine.
500 soldiers in Fort Dix, New Jersey, came down with the flu in February of 1976. Private David Lewis died, and it was determined that he had suffered from swine flu. At the time, it was feared that approximately 500 other soldiers on the base were ill with the same strain of influenza, and the alarm was sounded. In March 76, President Gerald Ford announced the biggest immunization program in history.
This virus was the cause of a pandemic in 1918 and 1919 that resulted in over 500,000 deaths in the United States.
Ford's intention was to vaccinate every man, woman, and child in the United States. Vaccine was rushed into production and imported in great quantities. The cost was to be about $135 million. And the first batch of vaccine was delivered on November 1st. The first public swine flu clinic opened 3 weeks later. From the beginning, the program was criticized for being hastily implemented and unnecessary. But over 50 million people in North America were inoculated at a cost of $100 million before investigators discovered an apparent increase in a rare paralytic disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome among the recently vaccinated. This and the fact that the epidemic failed to materialize led to a quick end to the vaccination program in December 1976.
Researchers and experts now fear that the failure of the swine flu epidemic to materialize in 76 will have detrimental effects on preparations for future pandemics. Dr. Arthur Silverstein was an advisor to the U.S. Senate Health Committee in 1976 and has written a book about the swine flu scare. Dr. Silverstein, you called your book about the experiences of 76 pure politics, impure science. Why is that the right image for those experiences?
I think it's the right image because whereas one still does, didn't then and still doesn't know all that much about the science of influenza virus, one knows a fair amount about how politics works in Washington. And politics worked very smoothly, although the science did not in the 76 flu outbreak.
In the town of South Paris, dozens of National Guard troops dressed in riot gear spent the day fighting off angry crowds desperately trying to get their hands on vaccinations against the H1N1 flu. At least that's what it all looked like. This was a drill, however, for guardsmen in the event of a swine flu pandemic. Steve Minnick has more from Oxford Hills High School.
Now what you see here is a situation these National Guardsmen and police hope they never have to deal with. But there is the possibility, since Oxford Hills High School is a dispensing point for the vaccination.
Killing riots. You know, hey, there's the medicine, we want it now. They're going to overwhelm the local PDs.
It's a what-if worst-case scenario. What if local police were not enough to quell crowds of people so panicked to get a flu shot they turned violent? Well, that is when they call in the National Guard.
We're treating every situation as it's actually happening. We try to train as we fight, we say in the military.
You guys be loud and boisterous. All right, cause some confusion.
This drill's designed to look and feel as realistic as possible, right down to the actual pepper spray and live tasers. These guardsmen don't know what to expect, while most of the crowd pelt them with eggs and bottles. Ryan Levesque pretends he's just an innocent onlooker. Eventually, though, he unsuccessfully attempts to break through the defense.
Well, the whole time they thought I was a student here, and I jump that fence, they find out I'm on four, and they're going to be pretty upset.
In this drill, the trouble's created by people showing up without proper ID or living outside the designated vaccination area. All potential real-life scenarios. Ultimately, the guard makes many arrests and is forced to shut this vaccination site down.
Hopefully not real at all, but we will train just in case we are caught up for something to happen.
Now, they say this is not to suggest this is how they expect Mainers to react, but the bottom line, they say, these troops need to be prepared for anything. In Paris, Steve Minnick, News 8.
All right, isn't that crazy? I told you I didn't make that stuff up. Yeah, apparently you guys are just going to go crazy and going to beat up those cops, so they got to bring in the National Guard to beat you up. Oh, all to get that swine flu shot, eh? Isn't that crazy? Okay, moving on now to, one of my favorite singer-songwriters and thinkers of all time, Bob Dylan. This is from a movie called Masked and Anonymous, came out in 2003. The director is Larry Charles. And in this scene right here, Bob Dylan comes across Val Kilmer. And, well, he plays a good weird guy, doesn't he? And so Val Kilmer goes off talking about the disease that is mankind. And, well, it sounds like the words might be Bob's. So give a listen to that, and I'll see you in a minute.
Beautiful animals.
Oh, thank you. But it's God deserves the credit. They don't have time to bother with success or getting rich. They don't have fantasies of glory. They don't borrow money to buy things that decrease in value while they own it. See, they're beautiful because they just are. They do what they do. Lion don't try to be a tiger. Rabbit don't try to do an impression of a monkey. They don't try to be what they're not. Unlike us as human beings. Cheetah, the tiger, the snake, the monkey, the bamboo, muskrat, the bobcat. Pig that's fat, the hippo, the rhino, the dodo, the honey badger, the slabby toad. Each one, each perfect in their own original form. That man came in. Who created him and for what purpose? Still a mystery. Why is he here? It's a mystery. We know he's trespassing. doesn't know his own place. Of course he doesn't know his own place. He don't have one. Man, the bear hunter, the fur trapper, the deer chaser, man, the bear hunter, the deer trapper, the man, the bear hunter, the fur trapper, the man, the deer chaser, baby seal clubber, the dolphin snagger, lowest form of existence, lowest form of existence. He's a rabble rouser. He's a stir upper, agitator. Goes around sticking his nose where it don't belong. The zoo, the aquarium, they are the prisons for the animal. These animals cannot learn anything from mankind. Man doesn't have a thing to teach them. I avoid looking at human beings. Disgust me so much with their atom bombs and blow dryers and automobiles. They build hospitals as shrines to the diseases they create. Human beings, alone with their secrets, masked and anonymous. No one truly knows them. If I see a crack in the sidewalk, it's more beautiful to me than any human being. A crack in the mud at the bottom of a sun-dried dead lake, I count that more beautiful than any human being. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Kind of like a curse in being born.
You got that right. Yeah, because we live in fear. But we know we're going to die. Animals don't know they're going to die. They got no fear. They live content in the moment. Holds us back. Knowledge of death. I say amazing grace indeed. I'll tell you something else. Ancient cultures, civilizations, we used to sacrifice animals like cattle and rabbits and goats and such instead of human beings. Now today we do it the other way around. We sacrifice a human being. Like the Incas, like the Aztecs, like the big corporations. Amazing grace indeed.
Hey, howdy.
What was that all about?
Guys and animals, I guess.
Oh, let's come on inside. I want to show you this place. You'll like it.
Right up your alley.
Oh, the networks are really behind this, putting up a lot of money for this deal. It's a bitched up world, Jack. The only way we can protect ourselves is by going mad.
It's a mixed up world, and the only way you can protect yourself is to go mad. So says that John Goodman. Well, let's listen to another TV personality, Rosie O'Donnell. Well, she was on The View a little while back, and you know what? She was starting to talk about 9/11 truth, and well, she's not on The View anymore, is she? But she does have a blog, and she included a vlog. And her special guest was William Rodriguez, known as the Keymaster and the last man out of the World Trade Center. And Rosie invited him on to, well, try to put pressure on the corporate mainstream media to cover Willie's amazing story. And a heck of a hero that day. And the main part of his story is that there were plenty of bombs going off from below in the basement of the trade centers. And you're not hearing that on The View anymore, are you? So let's give a listen to Rosie O'Donnell and William Rodriguez, and then we're going to hear a second clip from the Dylan movie Masked and Anonymous. This time we're going to have Jeff Bridges with a little bit of John Goodman again. And Jeff Bridges is the press, so he represents the press. And, you know, Dylan was real popular for saying a lot of things that were on people's minds in the early mid-60s, and so the press, I guess, we're looking to him for answers, and in this case, Jeff Bridges seems to be trying to put him in Dylan's mouth, even though he's not even saying him. So it's kind of an interesting little thing there. But anything that has to do with the press is piques my interest. So let's get on to Rosie O'Donnell with her guest William Rodriguez, and then a final clip from the 2003 Dylan movie Masked and Anonymous. See you shortly, friends.
Well, this is my friend Willie Rodriguez.
Hey, hi guys.
Hi, everybody. It's 9/11, a very hard day for America, and especially hard for you. You were the janitor, you cleaned the stairways, 110 floors.
Yes.
Your office, sub-basement level one, there are six sub-levels. So the lobby, then sub one, sub two, sub three, sub four, sub five, sub six. You were at sub one, you punched in at 8:30 in the morning. You were late, you weren't going to go to work, it was a beautiful day, you were going to take off.
Correct.
You come into work because your boss asked you to. You came in, you were a little bit late. At 8:46, you heard an explosion from beneath you.
From below.
From below.
Yeah.
It was so big that it lifted you up.
Everybody in the office.
14 people.
14 people.
Lifted you up.
Correct.
A few seconds later, you heard another explosion.
Coming all the way from the top of the building.
Turned out that was the plane.
That was the plane.
The first plane.
Mm-hmm.
But there was definitely an explosion before the first plane.
Oh, 100% sure.
You have a lot of witnesses who were down there.
Yes.
Who would confirm that fact.
Yes.
You told that fact to the 9/11 Commission?
Not only did I tell the fact to the 9/11 Commission, but I gave them a list of the eyewitnesses that were there that experienced the same event as I did, and they were never called to testify.
And was your testimony included in the 9/11 report?
No, it doesn't show anywhere.
It doesn't show.
It was omitted. There's 576 pages in that book, and you won't find my name anywhere.
Anywhere. You go all over the world, and you speak about what happened to you on that day, the fact that you had one of five pass keys that allowed you access to any and all doors in the complex?
That is correct, and I have a speech that I do all over the world as a motivation speech, but it always tells the real story of what happened on 9/11. And, you know, like I said, there's a lot of respect all over the world for this kind of story, but when I come here, I am able to tell the story, but it's always either edited or presented in a different way. And only, I guess, C-SPAN had the only pants to actually put my story without editing for basically almost 2 hours. For 2 hours, they let me tell my story. The only media network that allowed me full coverage.
I remember there was one interview that you were doing where you said, I heard a boom, and then they cut the footage.
Oh, that was ABC News. You can see it on Google.
Right, so what you said was, I heard an explosion from below. But as soon as you said explosion, they cut
from
the tape
and
they
fit
it into the plane.
In the plane, yes.
Yeah. You're not a conspiracy theorist, are you?
I don't. I'm a survivor. I was there. I experienced the event. I was affected, and I'm still affected. It's 7 years. I still have open wounds, emotional open wounds. I have to go through this depression, argumentation and debate constantly with politicians fighting for victims' rights. It's just, you know, I'm an activist, but at the same time, I'm a person that was affected by the worst event that we have ever experienced here in the United States. And I tell you, it's just not easy. It doesn't get any easier.
And you and the rest of the survivors, what you're calling for is a new and thorough investigation where all of the witnesses and survivors will be interviewed, and it all will be included. Now, there's a man who you met on September 11th, Felipe David.
Felipe David.
He was on sub-level 2 beneath you,
mm-hmm.
in his office, which is a small closet-sized office.
Right.
His job was to refill the vending machines.
Mm-hmm.
And you met him that day, 9/11.
He was totally burned.
He was burned.
He was totally burned.
He was beneath you.
He was beneath me, yeah.
No one on your level was burned.
No.
But he was beneath you in level 2. He was completely burned from the waist up.
And there was other people as well that got stuck on the floor below us because of that explosion. They went into an elevator to protect themselves because of the fire and the debris and all the things happening.
There was no fire on your level, sub 1,
no.
But there was fire, sub level 2.
There was no fire on the area where I was. I don't know if there was fire on the opposite side, but not on the area that I was, no, definitely no fire.
So Felipe came out of, came up to your level?
Came up to the level, came by the, by the area of the office itself, with the hands extended, all the skin hanging, 33% of his body burnt, pieces missing from his face.
And you helped him out, you got him into an ambulance, and
I
then went back in.
Correct.
You went back in 3 times.
Correct.
You credited with saving over 100 people's lives.
Something like that.
Yes. You yourself were the last man out. You dove underneath the fire truck as the debris fell.
Correct.
And somehow you were able to get out?
I came out. I brought a person on a wheelchair named Ed Bayet, and when I put him on the lobby with the 3 other firemen, I was told to get the ambulance ready. When I went to get the ambulance ready, the building started to collapse, and the only thing I saw was a fire truck. I slid right under the fire truck, and the building collapsed right on top of me. I was the only one that survived at that moment because all that group of firemen and the man on the wheelchair died at that moment. I'm the last person to exit the building, last man out of the building.
So here we are 7 years later, 9/11, a horrible day in American history, and Willie Rodriguez, a hero, friend of mine, he just wants to tell his story, and I don't know, 60 Minutes, 2020, NBC News, Dateline, someone. Somebody, tell this guy's story. It's all I got is a blog. Peace out, everybody. September 11th.
Hey, Jack.
Tom.
Friend.
Tom Friend with the press.
Oh, I know who you are. I know who you are.
Great. Long time, huh? Mind if I ask you a few questions? Clear up a few things?
Not at all. I don't mind. Ask away. You got a smoke?
No, I don't.
What do you want to know?
Well, I want to know. I want to know a lot of things.
Like what?
Well, I know you you had a twin brother. Whatever happened to him?
A hunting trip.
Yeah, well, Jack, that doesn't explain anything.
Well, he never came back.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. Oh, it won't hurt you to answer a few questions.
Yes, answer any questions.
Oh, this will do us a lot of good. Let's just keep it simple. Just tell him what he wants to know.
What does he want to know?
Can we keep it short?
Yeah, we can keep it short. Okay, Jack. Got a few things here. What about Mother's of Invention, Jack? Zappa. There's a guy. He wouldn't take no for an answer. He did that whole movie, Uncle Meat, 16 hours long, totally unedited. He let it all hang out, didn't he? What about you, huh? You ever let it all hang out?
Well, Zappa's been hanging out.
You know that the singer in the group, the Bee Gees? Yeah, he sounds a lot like Gene Pitney, doesn't he?
As opposed to who?
As opposed to who? Town Without Pity. You remember that, Jack? That place where they'd lock you up for doing something you haven't even thought about doing yet? It's a pretty lonesome world, Jack.
Hey, this here's supposed to be about a charity fundraiser, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap it up.
What about Hendrix? Remember Hendrix at Woodstock? I'm just curious, you weren't there, were you? You weren't at Woodstock. You weren't up there with Hendrix. Why? Where were you? Hey, you should have seen Hendrix, man. He was all business. Didn't mix business with pleasure. Find the Star Spangled Banner through two lousy speakers to a 500,000 people in the mud? What a cry that was! Cry forlorn. Yeah, one desperate cry of freedom up there with that screaming guitar. Now, what was he saying, Jack? That Star Spangled Banner trip. Now, what was that all about, huh? Revolution? Well, I don't think so. You could hear tears in every note he played, saying, "Love me. Love me. I'm not a traitor. I'm a native son." And he took the glorious anthem. He dropped drug bombs on it. You could hear that cry around the world saying, "Hey, I'm an American citizen." He's calling out to his forefathers, the pilgrims. Pilgrims, they didn't need any stinking passports, did they? Hey, Hendrix, Jack. He was the last man standing. Pride and honor, right? That's what it's all about. But I didn't hear him. One sad cry of pity in a town without pity. Now, what about you? What do you think about that? That's what I want to know. Would you reach out to a drowning man? Would you think while you were doing it that he might pull you in?
I think this guy's way out of line.
Hey, who wants a drink here? Huh? Anybody want a drink? I want a drink.
Tony, I've lost something.
Irene, apology. You've been avoiding me, man. You don't need to avoid me. I just want to know a few things.
I want to ask you a few questions. Who's making the money on the concert? You know, whose pockets is it lining? Remember Janis Joplin, huh? The Judy Garland of rock and roll? She took it all the way, didn't she? Yeah, Lord, all she wanted was a Mercedes Benz. Now, what pipe of power are you smoking from? Come on, man, tell me. You're supposed to have all the answers. What makes you tick, man?
You like people to fall on their knees, right? And fall all over you, huh? I don't do that. That's why you don't like me, right?
How much are they paying you to trot around the ring?
What about the king of the sexual revolutionaries, huh?
Hefner, that son of a Bible-thumping Baptist. How's that guy figuring into this? You're supposed to have all the answers, man. Come on.
Huh? Sexuality is more revolutionary than any ideology. You didn't know it.
Well, you think good and bad are irrelevant? Tell me why. Who's your true companion? Who makes your life easier? Can you at least answer me that?
I'm on your side, okay? I'm going to put your story on the cover of the London Times, man. You need the publicity. You know that. You've been to England lately? It ain't so endless anymore. The Empire is finished. They got the Big Ben and the Tower. Yeah, that's just a theme park. Jeez, you got your start there. Man, how does that make you feel? That the Empire is finished. Huh? What do you think about that? That's what it is. Hey, man, I'm on your side.
It depends on your point of view.
Hey, I don't want to be here any more than you do.
I doubt it.
Okay, there it is. That was Jeff Bridges and Bob Dylan. And there we are. Jeff Bridges does the press. Sticking it to Bob there. And you know what? That's just going to about wrap up the show tonight. I've got one last piece I'm going to play. It's Richard Gage, AIA. He's the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And he was recently interviewed on a Russian television station. I believe they're out of New York. And so well done to the station. They had Luke Radowski on not too long ago as well. So this Russian station is putting a lot of truthers on TV. So isn't that something? Okay, so yeah, friends, that's going to do it. This has been the Unbought and Unbossed Show. I'm your host, Raymond. And coming up next, we got something called APAC. So give that a listen. And we'll do this again next week, all right? All right, friends. Be well.
While nearly 8 years after the terror attacks on the World Trade Center in New York, many questions remain unanswered. The official investigation closed many years ago, but now a group of engineers and architects is calling for a new probe into what happened that day. They claim the reason why the towers collapsed was because they were rigged with explosives.
Here's the three bar collapse right down.
September 11th, 2001, World Trade Center number 7. The U.S. government said that this building and the two others collapsed as a result of fires ignited by jet fuel. But according to these folks, those are all lies. Richard Gage is the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
You have the chemical evidence.
An organization of experts and professionals who believe that the real story behind the destruction of the towers is still up in smoke.
No building has ever collapsed due to fire in a high-rise building, ever. The Twin Towers were brought down with explosive-controlled demolition. We have a free-fall collapse in the case of Building 7 for 100 feet of its fall, which can't happen without the columns being forcibly removed as in a typical controlled demolition.
Volunteers came from all over the country to show videos, hand out brochures, and point out the inconsistencies between government agencies' explanations of what happened on 9/11 and scientific evidence that seems to prove otherwise.
We have chemical evidence of high-tech explosives found in all of the dust. We have evidence of thermite found in the molten iron samples. This can't happen in normal office fires. They don't have half the temperature required to melt steel. Where did the molten iron come from?
And those at the convention seem to be eating this new information right up. They, too, wanted more answers.
I could certainly
find it easy to believe that the truth was covered up.
If something other than airplane fuel made the World Trade Centers come down, we need to understand what that was and what caused it.
I would need to know a lot more about what's going on here.
And with this group calling for a fresh look at the attacks that shook America, one question lingers.
Who put the explosives in there?
We don't know who may have put the explosives there or why or how they did it. So we're asking for a real investigation, and let's let the chips fall where they may.
Gates is just one of over 700 architects and engineers who claimed that it was a controlled demolition that resulted in the collapse of the World Trade Centers. And now these experts are calling for a brand new investigation into the September 11th attack in the hopes of uncovering more of the truth underneath all the rubble. Dina DeFox, KRT, Washington, D.C.